Hello there. Are you ready to hear tales of the paranormal, weird, unexplained, and just plain creepy? If the answer is yes, then welcome to your worst nightmare. But be warned, there's no turning back. Now here are Todd, Sean, and Nate, and they are middle-aged and creeped out.
Hey, creepies, welcome to episode 187. Nate is your tech engineer. We are your hosts, Todd and Sean, and we are middle-aged and creeped out. What is going on tonight, guys?
Having a glorious night.
Oh, we bumped heads.
How's it going?
It's going well. Going well. You guys doing all right? Having a good week?
Glorious night.
Yeah.
Good.
Now we're skittish.
What's going on? Take your time.
We're having a wonderful
evening
together.
Just wink at each other to tell who's
wink, wink, and nod, nod.
Who's going to talk. you guys having a good week, though?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah.
How's your week?
You know what, Nate? Thanks for asking.
Because Sean never asked.
Monday was good. Tuesday sucked. And today was good, though. So I'm having overall a good week. You guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I appreciate you asking, though. That makes me feel good.
No problem.
Because Sean won't.
Yeah. Who loves you, baby?
Nate does. Oh, that's okay. Yeah, I'm having a good week.
Go Vitell.
Do what?
Isn't that Vitell, Dick Vitell?
Oh, yeah. Baby.
Who loves you, baby?
He's a PTP-er. He's a diaper dandy. Yeah, we are glad the creepies are joining us whenever they are listening to this. Beautiful weather this week.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
70s, low 70s.
We're now
in
October.
Yeah, as we're recording this, it is October 2nd, which means I need to get my butt in gear and decorate for Halloween. Our house.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time this drops, it'll be well into October, right? Yeah, October 9th or something like that.
It'll be the 9th. You got it right there.
Yeah.
7 plus 2 is 9.
That's right. Simple math.
Weird how that happens.
I'm lost.
I am too, actually. So I'm glad the creepies are joining us. Let's get right to it. Sean, do we have a sponsor?
We most certainly do. Are you tired of an itchy, unruly beard? Want a beard that looks great, feels amazing, and smells masculine and sexy? Meet your new best friend, Cultured Creature Beard Balm. Cultured Creature Beard Balm is a game changer. Made with all natural ingredients like mango butter, shea butter, argan, avocado, jojoba, grape seed, and meadowform seed oil. It nourishes your beard and the skin beneath. Say goodbye to dryness and itchiness, and hello to soft, well-groomed, and great-smelling beard. Not only does it tame your mane, but it also leaves a subtle, masculine scent with options like Cuban tobacco, sandalwood and bourbon, cedar and leather, and more. Feel confident all day, whether at the office or on a date or at the gym. It's easy to use. Just rub a small amount between your palm and work it into your beard. Simple and effective, and no mess. Cultured Creature Beard Balm is handmade, organic, and natural. Made by a father-daughter duo with over 20 years of beard care experience. It's packed with vitamins and nutrients and zero additives or preservatives. Ready to transform your beard? Visit refineyourwildside.com and use promo code MAKO10, that's MAACO10, for an extra 10% off your first order. Plus, all Cultured Creature Beard Balm is already 20% off, so that's 30% off your first order. Cultured Creature Beard Balm, where nature meets nurture for the ultimate beard care experience. Don't tame your wild side, refine it with Cultured Creature Beard Balm.
Thank you, Cultured Creature Beard Balm.
You're happy every time you
That's
get that
like
right.
Three episodes in a row, Nate.
Mm-hmm. Man, some kind of record.
Fire, Cultured Creature Beard Balm. Yeah, we do appreciate them.
Mm-hmm. Sponsor. Todd is on fire.
Used it yesterday.
In Fuego.
Yeah.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
What'd you put in? What was the scent? Let me guess.
I think.
What's the sandalwood?
Mm-mm.
No.
No, I
barbecue?
Did. I think it's
barbecue.
Mesquite.
Barbecue mesquite.
Nocturnal. It might be just nocturnal or nocturnal something.
Nocturnal raccoon or something.
Yeah, but it's.
Nocturnal animal.
I can only think of something really dirty.
Remember the exact scent.
Huh. No, jojoba? No, that's
I was thinking,
never mind. That's not the
Yeah, that's an ingredient.
I think it's the bourbon.
Oh, yeah.
Bourbon is awesome. That would be awesome.
That would be.
I don't know. I can't remember.
Now that you can drink, right?
I'm failing. I should know
that's
it,
right.
But I don't.
It's
that's
your
right.
product.
Hey, that's okay. That's okay. So go get you some Cultured Creature Beard Balm. You see
yes.
how fast I said that?
I like that.
Anyway, moving on. It's Todd's dad joke of the show. Yes, that's right.
Why Yay.
You give thank us you. A... Thank you, Nate. Sean just gave me a blank stare.
I'm just waiting.
Huh?
I enjoy the smirk.
With excitement.
The smirk
right?
on your face every time.
You hear that? I can already envision the creepy
Todd eating yes. grin.
It's that time. That's why they listen to the show. And after that, they just turn it off. Nate, Sean, Nate.
Yes,
you know
yes.
why fruit is never good to play golf with? Because they almost all slice.
Sort of had a feeling that was coming.
Because they almost all slice, Nate.
I figured
it
was hook.
Sean and Nate. No hook. Lots of slicing.
Fruit
that,
ninja.
Fruit ninja. Fruit golfer. That is the Todd's
dad joke
of the show. So you're welcome, as
That's
always.
That's a good one.
Yeah, thanks, Nate. Mm. I appreciate it. Sean, who cares? I don't care about your
Well, opinion. I was going to say I loved it. But
oh, okay.
Now you love it, huh?
Well, hey, let's move on to Sean. Your yes. First announcements, please. Sir,
I have him over here. We come here every Wednesday night for the guy time, the paranormal, the spooky, the creepy, the fun, let's be honest. But the most important thing that we do is continue to build a mental health community. And so we want to make sure you guys are getting help out there. We all need it, or we know somebody that does. So we want you to call or text 988 or text HOME to 741-741 for any type of mental distress, suicide prevention, or any other type of crisis that you or someone you know may be experiencing.
Amen to that.
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Good
I like
stuff.
It. I like it a lot. Yes, we want our creepies healthy, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We love our creepies.
They listen to us better when
Do
they're
Do they
healthy.
Love us, though?
I think so.
Yeah. Or is it more of like they just put up with us?
Tolerate.
Are we going to send them?
You know what? I'll take that.
Are we going to send them the little note, you know, under the desk or across the desk that says, you know, do you like me, yes or no?
Yeah, sir. Yeah.
Mako.
Yeah.
Sign Mako.
Yeah. We're going to do like that. Remember that thing that you would.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
What
yeah.
was that?
Yeah. I can't remember what the
Origami
heck that was.
Origami flower thing.
That's, yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's right.
I like it. Anyway, we do love our
Let creatures. Us down gently, though, please.
Yes, exactly.
Fortune teller.
Fortunes for sale.
Right. Yeah. We used to play it all the time.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that
no,
was.
I just yeah. played it last week. No. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yes, make sure you guys are taking care of yourselves.
That makes me think of MASH, too. Remember MASH?
We're moving on.
Uh-huh.
Special announcements? None.
Not again?
There's no special announcements.
Row.
2 weeks in a row. Yeah. Sean, what were you saying, Sean?
Do you remember MASH?
Yeah, I hated that show. It sucks.
Oh, no, it wasn't the show.
It's terrible.
The game. MASH. You remember MASH?
Oh.
Mansion Apartment.
No, I don't.
No.
Moving
Shelter.
On.
Oh, okay, so never mind. Yeah. It's a game that my kids have. They started playing it. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's
okay.
MASH. Long story. We'll save it for another time.
All right. That's great.
Not the show.
Yeah. No, again, no special announcements.
I like the show.
Hey, Sean.
Yes.
You're up, though, with something more important than what you were just talking about.
That's correct.
What are we going to talk about?
We just had an amazing guest chat, a highly anticipated one, right, with Kate and Ted of the Randolph County Asylum. And please check out our show notes on how to follow the Randolph County Asylum.
Hey, Creepies. We have a very, very special guest chat for you guys tonight. We have two members of the staff at the Randolph County Asylum in Winchester, Indiana, about, what, hour and a half from mm-hmm. us?
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. about an hour and a half, yeah.
And we went there at the end of April, I believe, beginning of May,
mm-hmm.
And it was awesome. We have with us Ted and Kate of the Randolph County Asylum. Kate and Ted, how are you guys?
We're great. How about you, Katie? You okay?
Oh, I'm never okay. I'm always crappy, but that's fine.
Well,
wonderful.
That's yeah, well,
nothing,
good.
Nothing unusual.
Nothing unusual, huh?
Exactly.
Right.
Well, good. All right. Well, we can go with that.
I was going to say, Kate, at least you're honest.
That's right. We like that on here. Well, thank you for joining us, taking time out of your busy schedules. I know, Kate, when we were talking before the recording, you said it's kind of crazy at the asylum. Is that confirmed, Ted? It's been pretty busy?
Yes, definitely. Every day, either mini hunts, ghost history tours, or overnight guests. Wow. There's always somebody here.
Yeah. Yeah. Kate said that there's really not a spooky month. It's kind of like a spooky season or maybe you call it spooky year because it's just all year round. You really don't. It's not just October.
Yeah, there's been a lot of activity going on. About everybody has had some kind of action here.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy. Well, let's get right into it, because I know our listeners are interested, and we love to hear the stories as well again. Before that, though, Kate, how long have you been with Randolph County Asylum?
Ted Shanghai'd me, what? It's been 5 years now, Ted?
Yeah, real close.
Okay. Wow, that's a long time. What about you, Ted?
About the same as Katie. I've been here just a little bit longer than her.
Okay. Okay. And you're responsible for getting Kate on board. Okay. You Shanghai'd her. I get it. That's awesome.
I tried.
You tried. Right. Right. Well, let's get right to it. So as far as the Randolph County Asylum, tell our listeners kind of a little bit, some quick history, like, you know, when was it built, or how long has it been around? How long was it at Asylum? And then we'll just kind of go from there and get into some stories from you guys.
Katie, you'd be better at that than me. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the current building is the third one here in Randolph County. The first one actually opened in 1851. And that operated and burned to the ground. They built a second one, and that one, they didn't fire the bricks right. So that building melted. And the current building was built on the original foundation from 1851 and opened in 1899. Wow. And it operated from then until 2006 is when it officially closed. But the last two decades it was open, it was being run as a nursing home and was leased from the county for that purpose.
Okay. So you said, so 2006, you said, is when the last time it was operational. Okay. Wow. That's not that long ago. What?
It's not.
18 years. Is my math right?
Wow.
Yeah. That's crazy. And so, yeah. So, and then you guys came on board, what would have been 2019? So just
2015, I think.
So, so just a few years after it closed. Okay. Wow. How many, and I'll let Sean and Nate start asking questions too. How many residents does it hold, or did it hold when it was operational?
Katie, what was it? Wasn't it around, didn't it average about 40, 45 people?
Yeah, between 40 and 45 people in the residential section. And then you had, additionally, you had the superintendents living there. And that was a family. So that could be anywhere from, you know, three people to 8 or 9, depending on how many kids they had.
Right. And real quick, before I let Sean and Nate take the mics, I didn't remember that you called the superintendent. I thought they lived off site for some reason. So they lived there in the asylum.
Quarters.
Okay. Yeah. In the quarters. I don't remember that. So that's,
you know, where there was carpet here in the infirmary, you know, remember the living room?
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
You know, every place there was carpet, that's what the superintendents called home.
Okay.
Even upstairs, their bedrooms upstairs.
That's right. That is right. I completely forgot that. Mm-hmm. See, I need to get back. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, it is carpet. It's got the upstairs and all that. So, yeah. Sean, Nate, you got any questions?
I wanted to make sure and tell you guys that, and I know we've mentioned this to you guys before, but we've been doing this podcast for over, you know, 3.5 years. And we have, one of the things that we first started saying that we wanted to do was visit Randolph County Asylum. And I had that paper sitting there forever and ever and ever. And we kept saying, okay, well, just not the right time, not the right time. So it was so awesome that this year we actually got to be part of it. And it's funny because I know Lydia, especially Melissa, they told us, they said, it's a building with, you know, an amazing history. And we got, you know, we got that from you guys, but it was, they said, it's a place that calls to you, you know, it, and it's almost like it calls people that need it, or that it wants to come, to come visit. And I thought, oh, you know, how true is that? But there is something about it. And that we were driving home and it was like, I'm ready to go back, you know, and we truly need to get back in there. So, but it's a place that has a special feel to it. Do you guys, I know working there now, you know, 5 years or so, what, how does that feel to you guys?
Well, I think it's comforting. Mm-hmm. I get a feeling of comfort here. You know, of course, there were some bad things that happened here, but there's going to be bad things that happens whenever there's a large group of people around anyhow. But it's been comforting. It just has a natural feel to it, as if you're welcome here, you know? What about you, Kate?
Well, we have a lot of guests, and when they walk in the door, it's this instant, I'm home feeling when they walk in. And to your point about the building speaking to you, that's, I tell guests when they call and they're looking at a reservation and they, you know, I see you've got all these different properties, which one, you know, I'm not sure which one, do you have a recommendation? I tell people to go and look at photos of the places and see if one of them speaks to them. And this place just seems to call to people. I mean, even in photos of, I need to go there. Mm-hmm. So
I think that's what I was most surprised about, that feel. And then we've been to other places, some places where you feel that you get this really creepy vibe and are really like, oh, I don't like the vibes of this place. But I felt like, and that part of that was you guys were so welcoming, but there really was when we were taking the tours, and Lydia showed Austin and I around a little bit first, and I and Austin had been there before, so he kind of knew the energy of the place, but I was pretty impressed, really. But it is, what part of the history of the place is you guys' favorite? I know you guys tell the entire history of, but do you guys have a favorite era of the building?
Ted?
Well, I'm trying to think. Actually, when they first built it, and when they first got this building built and people walked across the driveway and moved in, I think my favorite part would have been what they used for the Wichita Towers for. Okay. I enjoy that. You know what they used for the Wichita Towers for?
I actually don't know.
Well, you stop and think about it. If you live here, you're broke. You haven't got a dime. Mm-hmm. And chances are you're going to stay here for your entire life. So that means you're probably going to pass away here too. Well, the county offers you a free funeral. And you know well as I do, it's going to be as cheap as possible.
Right.
Mm. You know? And so they used the witch's hat towers. If you remember, these witch's hat towers that we got have a wood, have an oak bench around the inside of them.
Okay, I remember.
That means if you die here, there's going to be a dead gurney. Somebody's already going to have a pine box built and sitting on that dead gurney, and they're going to wheel it into your room that you passed in. They're going to roll you into that pine box, and then they're going to bring you down here to this witch's hat tower and pick the pine box with you in it up off the gurney and set it on a wooden table here.
Oh, wow.
And then they get 4 to 6 volunteers to sit on this oak bench around the witch's hat tower. And they got to sit there for 24 hours to watch you in your casket for 24 hours to make sure you don't wake up.
Oh, wow.
That's why funerals cool, but creepy. Are called wakes.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a job.
Sign me up, right?
Imagine if you was one of the volunteers and whoever was in the casket had a diabetic coma. That's where your heart only beats once or twice a minute. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you can sit there on that old hardwood bench. You can think about it. You've been sitting there on that wooden bench for 6 hours. By then, your butt hurts, your back hurts. You got to go to the bathroom. I'm hungry. I'm cold. I never liked him that well anyhow. You know, they're not going to notice 1 to 2 heartbeats in a person's chest.
True.
And that means in the morning when the mortician comes and asks you, well, did he wake up? Nope, he dead, buried. And you come out of the diabetic coma when you're 6 feet under in a pine box. Imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anything any more terrifying than that.
No, I can't. Being buried alive is just like horrifying to me. I'm not afraid of much, but that would get me.
I'm claustrophobic anyhow. I know it would get me.
Yeah. I think it would most people. What about you, Nate?
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
You got any favorite thing, Katie?
I have a little bit older history that I enjoy than you. So going back to 1851 and the building of the first asylum. So that first asylum is built on a limestone foundation. And when they built the third asylum to get it up cheap and quick, they built on top of that foundation to build the existing building. So that foundation is still down there. And down in the basement, there's one room that has, you can see the original entry into the 1851 asylum. And it's bricked over. But you can see that original door into the first asylum. And over that door on the keystone is a Mason's mark, because the Freemasons here in Winchester helped build the 1851 asylum. So their mark is on the keystone over the door. And that just, I don't know, for some reason speaks to me. That's my favorite room in the building.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah. That's very interesting. And I kind of remember that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do too.
Like I said, we need to go back so I can just see it again. You know, I'm trying to remember all the different aspects of the building. Yeah. And yeah, and you say, oh, that was the original 1851. Yeah, it was built back on top of the original foundation. That's crazy. What about you, Nate? Any questions for anything for Kate or Ted? Offhand?
Not offhand at the moment.
Well, I was thinking, tell our listeners about some of the, I guess, I don't know, word famous or most notable residents that lived at the asylum.
Which one do you want to talk about, Kate? Ida?
Oh, I can talk about Ida.
You talk about Ida. She wanted me dead, remember?
Oh, yes. Probably best.
I remember that.
Yeah,
I probably better handle Ida in that case. Okay. So Ida Gunkel is admitted to the asylum in 1936. Now, her husband had died 6 years before that of neurosyphilis. Apparently, he was a really friendly traveling salesman and a bit of a philanderer. He brought home a present to his wife. He dies of neurosyphilis. She has it. And her family was doing their best to take care of her. But by 1936, she'd gotten to a point where they just couldn't do it anymore. So they brought her out to the asylum and they admitted her out there. It was a home for the poor and the chronically ill and the handicapped. So that's where Ida ended up. And having neurosyphilis, you know, she's half catatonic sometimes. Other times she's just wandering around and kind of out of her mind. But they had her on a room on the second floor. And by 1938, she'd gotten to a point where she'd come out of her room and she'd be screaming or wandering around a 350-acre farm with no idea who she is, where she's going, or what's going on around her. And it's a really dangerous situation. Farms are dangerous anyway. If you know, or paying attention, you can get hurt. But not knowing where you're at and going, it's super dangerous. So they decided they were going to try to keep her there, try to take care of her as best they could rather than send her to a mental institution. So they moved her down to the basement. So for whatever reason, down in the basement there, in the original foundation, there's a room that has bars in the window. And that's the room that they moved Ida down to. So they move her down there with all her belongings. And every night at 10 o'clock, they'd lock the door. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, they'd go and they'd open the door and they'd let her out. Half the time, she's just staying in the room, kind of catatonic. Other times, she's coming out, she's wandering around. But with everybody in the building knowing what's going on with her, they're all helping to keep an eye on her. But at night, when they're locking her in, they're sure she's safe because they know she can't get out on the grounds because the door is locked and the window is barred. So this is what they're doing all of 1938. And then one night in August, when Mrs. Thornburg went down to tell her goodnight, Ida asked Mrs. Thornburg for a broom. Now, Mrs. Thornburg, by this point, is thrilled that Ida is cognizant enough to be asking for a broom. The residents are supposed to be keeping their rooms clean. So, you know, the fact that she's asking for a broom, Mrs. Thornburg's thrilled. So she brings her the broom, tells her goodnight, locks the door, and goes to bed. And when she comes down in the morning to open the door and let Ida out, she finds that in the night, Ida had taken that broom and put it over the pipes that extended across the ceiling in there. and then use some of the ticking from her mattress to hang herself. Oh. Now, she's not particularly fond of Ted because from the symptoms she was experiencing, we weren't exactly certain what she was going through. And we had made the assumption that maybe she was going through a psychotic break because of menopause, because she was about 56 years old. And that's about the right age for that. So we thought she was having, you know, psychotic menopause, basically. And that wasn't the case. But she didn't much appreciate that story being told. So she has threatened Ted and said that she wishes he would drop dead.
Oh, gosh.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's
a little spooky when you're here by yourself. No,
sure. Heck yeah.
It's spooky if you had 20 people with you.
You're right.
Ted, as I recall, didn't she say that you could tell a story about her, but you had to do it in that front parlor?
Yeah, through a medium that I met from Memphis, Tennessee, she told me through the medium that she's okay with me telling her story as long as I do it upstairs here in the living room and not in her room down there. Mm-hmm. If you think about the Christian side about it, suicide's a big no-no.
Right, right.
And I kind of got a feeling that she probably can't move on. So I got a feeling she's more or less stuck here. And so by me telling her story in her room that it happened to, I think she got sick of hearing it day in and day out and actually held it against me.
Okay, so you just answered the question I was going to ask. I was going to ask, why does it matter if you tell it in her room or upstairs, but you answered it. So that's a good answer. I understand that too. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe why she didn't want Ted to say it in, you know, downstairs. Yeah. And she has to hear it all the time. Makes sense. And you said, how old was she, Kate? You said like 56, 58?
Yeah. 56 years old, roundabout.
Wow. Young, really young. Gosh, that's a sad story. Yeah, I remember, you know, you guys talking about Ida. What other residents that are notable that stayed there?
Well, I think Doris Addington deserves a lot of credit. She came here when she was only 11 years old. Now her parents were residents here, not superintendents, but residents here. And one day her dad got a inheritance check in the mail from a rich uncle or something. And he done the only thing that most people would do. He bought his way out. He bought a farm down the road. And it had a car with it. And he had three daughters, all three of the girls. So his wife and all three of the girls went with him and they moved out to the farm. Well, one Saturday afternoon, they were moving the car down towards Winchester to get groceries. And of course, he wasn't used to driving because he spent most of his life here. And he was involved in a head-on accident and it killed Mr. and Mrs. Addington. Of course, the girls weren't with him. And so that left the girls being orphans. Well, the girls are smart enough that they know that they're still young enough that they definitely need parental guidance. So they think they'd be better off if they would put themselves up for adoption out at the orphan's home. And then the two older girls got to thinking about it. And thought, yeah, that'll be good for them too. But what about Doris? Doris is only 11 years old, and she has a speech defect. She stutters. Uh-huh. And they don't think that Doris would ever get adopted out of the orphan's home because she has a speech defect. And if you think about it, if you walk into an orphan's home, say in the 1920s, and walk in and say hello to a little 11-year-old girl standing over there against the wall, and it takes her all the following day to say hello back to you. What's the odds of you adopting her? You're going to think something's wrong with her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think her older sisters were correct. They thought that she probably would be better off coming back here to where she has actually grown up. And, of course, they didn't tell her that. So on one Sunday afternoon, one of the girls must have had legs long enough she could reach the pedals on the car because she could drive the car. And they pulled up out here in front, on right on 27. They pulled up right here in front of the building right at the end of our sidewalks. And all three of the young girls got out of the car and come up here and sat on the front steps. And they got their arms around Doris and everything else, talking to her and carrying on. And they're breaking the news to her that they're going to leave her here. Mm. Well, needless to say, Doris is upset about it. And so there's a lot of tears being shed and all that. And as soon as the girls tell Doris that they're going to leave her here, the two older girls go back and get in the car and drive off and leave little 11-year-old Doris sitting on the front steps out here. Well, they no sooner drove off than what the front door opened up, and the superintendent walked outdoors and wanted to know what was the matter with Doris. Well, you can't tell me he wasn't in on it because his timing was too perfect. So my guess is that the two older girls had probably already worked out a deal with the superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Well, Doris told him that my sister just left me. And naturally, the superintendent asked her, what is it that you plan on doing to help us out up here? He's thinking like a house cleaner. Got to remember, this is 66,000 square feet building. And so he's thinking house cleaning. What Doris told him up right up front, she said, I am 11 years old and I know how to cook, and that's what I'm going to do. Well, good for her, you know. Mm-hmm. And right. So he told Doris, he said, you go downstairs and get with Mary, who is a volunteer first cook here. And he said, you work with her for a couple of years and learn the ropes, and then it could be all yours. Well, that's fine, except Mary didn't live two more years. She got sick and passed away. So before Doris is even 13, she's cooking three meals a day for everybody in this building.
Wow.
And that's pretty incredible. Find me a 13-year-old kid that can do that today.
No right. Kidding.
No kidding. Seriously.
You know, without a Game Boy or a PlayStation.
Right. Right. True.
Probably
true.
Can't be done.
All right.
You know? And so Doris turned out to be an excellent cook. And different civic organizations and churches in Winchester knew she was a good cook. And so, like, if a church was having a walk-in meal or something for the congregation, or the Lions Club was having a meal, or the Rotary or Kiwanis, or they would always ask Doris to come and help her, and they would offer to pay her. Well, she would always go help, but she would never take no money. And also, they would offer to let her stay someplace else rather than her. Well, her answer to that would be that, nope, she had to get back out here because somebody might have missed supper and they're probably hungry and she's got to take care of
them.
So as she got older, she became more obligated to this place than what she would have when she was younger, naturally. She probably realized this place probably saved her bacon, really.
Yeah, sure.
So
sure.
She was an excellent cook. She made a green bean casserole that melt in your mouth, and I love green bean casserole.
That's funny. She had a servant's heart, for sure.
Yeah. That's what Doris is somebody that I remember very distinctly, and I remember being in her kitchen, and there was a very comforting presence and feeling there. Mm-hmm. Like you just felt warm. And I remember the picture that you guys have in there too is really sweet. And that's one of the story, you know, Ida is one of the stories. The judge is another one of the stories. And then, Doris, those are the ones that really stuck with me, from there. And, but I think Doris is probably my favorite.
How old was she when she passed?
81.
So wow. She was there 70 years.
Wow.
She died in 1984 of H1N1 bird flu.
Oh, okay.
And she passed in 1984. She was 81 years old. And you stop to think she was 11 when she came here. That means she cooked out here for 70 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, the Lions Club found out when she wouldn't take no money that she loved dolls. And so the Lions Club bought her a doll and gave it to her. And needless to say, it came back out here with her. And so the Lions Club passed it around that she loved dolls. And so every civic organization from then on would buy her a doll for her helping them cook. And so she wound up with a pretty good collection. She got around 24 of them out here that are really hers. There's probably 100 dolls out here, but that's just from people that knows the story, bringing them out here personally to give to her. And one thing she never neglected to do is if you give her a doll through a spirit box, she's never neglected to thank you.
Oh that's wow. Awesome.
That's sweet. Yeah, and I remember the doll room. Yeah. And does it, isn't she very particular how they are?
It creeps me out. I don't
It creeps. It creeps. Yeah. Isn't Ida very particular on how her dolls are? Like if you move one or not have it.
Doris. Right.
Or I'm sorry. Yeah. Doris.
Well, she got her favorites. She
right.
got She told me who her favorite is. It looks like Scarlett O'Hara in the movie Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It looks kind of like her. And that's the one I don't like.
The creepiest
one I don't like. And I told her. She says it's beautiful. But the one thing that I did into that room was in the 5 years that I've been doing this, I found out that most men are afraid of dolls.
Mm-hmm.
They won't, you'll never get them to admit it. But if they would be honest with yourself, it creeps them out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
And so I added a little bit of humor to the room. There's a piece of conduit coming down the wall to a plug-in, and I wrapped a couple of Barbie dolls around the conduit like pole dancers.
They pole dancing, I remember that.
I don't remember that.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got pictures of that.
Stuffed dollar bills in your program.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And any guy that comes in the room, every man knows what a pole dancer is.
Yeah.
and he thinks it's funny, and he's not really afraid of the dolls anymore.
Mm.
Well, Doris,
you know, and I've had a hard time getting some men to even set foot in the room. I usually have to go in and, you know, a little tiny girl leading you into a room that most men are going to let you get, you know, sure. go with you to prove that they're really manly after all. Sure. But the dolls, the stripper Barbies never fail to help.
That's funny.
And they've made over $100 for the asylum. So
that's
oh, wow.
They're working it.
There you go. Yeah, I guess so.
Working girls.
Yeah. Working dolls.
They had some money and some chuckles.
Well, a little thing that happened this past summer was one of the dolls fell off the wall. And I put it back up and I had a little spirit box with me. And all of a sudden my spirit box talked to me. It said, Ted, that's nasty. And I said, I'm sorry, Doris. I'm sorry. I realize you're a church woman, but I can't get some guys to even come in your room because they're terrified of your dolls. Well, whatever you have to do, but that's still nasty.
So Doris sounds very communicative. She gives a lot of feedback. Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. What an awesome story. Is there... And we kind of slid into it, which is great. Let's talk about some of the hauntings, good or bad. Have you either one, Kate or Ted? Have you had anything stick out as far as one of your favorite, you know, interactions, or maybe least favorite interactions? Maybe something that you felt attacked or just kind of uneasy. Let's get into some of the other hauntings.
Well, I was up in the attic with the Booth brothers, Christopher and Philip, and they both had SLS cameras.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them asked me, he said, "Ted, where did the judge hold his mock trials?" And I said, "Right in front of you guys." And "Do you know him?" And I said, "Yes, well enough that I talk about him every time that somebody comes in up here." And Philip said, "Look at my screen on the computer." And I looked at the screen, and there's a stick figure head looking out from behind an upright up there. And he says, "You reckon that's the judge?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." He said, "You think you can get him to come out of there?" And I said, "Sure." Of course, I can't see it with my eyes. You know, I don't have an SLS camera, so I couldn't see it with my eyes. But I seen his head sticking out from behind that upright on his screen. So I walked over there, and I said, "Judge, if this is you," I said, "that camera them guys got can't hurt you. That can't do anything to you. It'd make you look like a stick figure. They would like for you to come out from behind this upright so they can see you better." And I turned around and walked across the opening and leaned on a chimney up there, backwards on a chimney. And Philip said, "Teddy's following you." Christopher said, "Ted, as a matter of fact, he's leaning against the chimney right beside you. He's got his foot resting up against it just like you do." Well, I'm still wanting to see it. You know, naturally, if the judge is standing right beside me, I would like to see it. The next thing that I know was that I broke into a cold sweat. And I thought I was going to pass out or throw up or both or everything. And so I scooted down. I'm getting old, so I scooted down closer to the floor so I didn't do a face plant right there. And about that time, Christopher popped up and he said, "Ted, I think the judge likes you. He put his hand on your shoulder." Well, I knew something was going on because something was zapping me big time. And I told him, I said, "Judge, I said, I like you too. I think a lot of you too. But would you please take your hand off of me because I'm not dead yet." And I said, "You're making me sick."
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
And within 10 seconds, I felt fine. And I asked the guys again. I knew they could see what was happening. I asked them again. I said, "What happened? What'd he do?" And Christopher popped up and he said, "Well, he done exactly like you asked him to do. He dropped his hand down off your shoulder and he walked back across the floor and went behind an upright and we can't see him no more at all." So any doubt that I had before went right out the window that night. There was no doubt in my mind that he was there. Because I knew something was happening. I couldn't see his hand on my shoulder. I couldn't feel his hand on my shoulder. But I knew I was sure sick. And I was losing my energy pretty quick.
Hmm. Did they show you any video of that? Where you could see the stick figure?
Ted? No, I never seen it.
No. Oh man, that would be really cool.
I could picture it though. You know,
yeah, like I can't see. That's a very vivid
story. Mm-hmm. I was standing next to you when you were telling that story up there, yeah. And I that was one of my other favorite parts of the tour.
Yeah.
I love because I know the judge had a lot of shenanigans while he was there. He was a bit of a power hungry kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
That area up there is really neat. Back there, where he, like you said, he had the mock trials, and then we joked about how there's so much open space there, you could play a full court basketball game.
Yeah, that was the first thing I noticed. I'm like, basketball court.
Yeah, that attic's big enough and you could do a full court basketball game, yeah. And have bleachers on both sides of the
seriously.
Floor.
Mm-hmm. Seriously. Yeah. It was a great
huge.
Space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's huge.
And I was thinking,
do you have anything, Katie?
Oh. A lot of people have this assumption that if a place is haunted, then you go at night. You want to go and you want to spend the night because that's when you're going to get the activity. And that's not true. If a place is haunted, it's haunted and it's 24/7.
Right.
So my story is being there at noon, getting ready to let people in for a mini hunt. And they happen to want to buy a couple of shirts. And we keep shirts on site in stock, and we try to keep the stock up. But every now and again, we'll be running short on something. So I always go back to check, make sure we have everything in stock, and then go let them know, you know, hey, we're out of mediums or whatever it is, you know. So I did that, came back out, and the lady that was there told me that she needed a medium and an extra large t-shirt. So I headed back to the storeroom to pick them up for her. And when I opened the door to get the shirts, there was a medium and an extra large shirt laying in the middle of the storeroom floor.
Wow.
Waiting for me. So.
Cool.
Explain that one.
Yeah.
They were trying to help, and I appreciate that very much, but I let them know that that wasn't necessary, and I could get them for myself from now on. But, you know, we have activity day and night, and a lot of times it's things like that, you know, the judge up there wanting to, you know, get to know Ted and just kind of putting a hand on his shoulder and hanging out, or, you know, somebody grabbing some t-shirts for me. It's, you know, you don't have a lot of that dark kind of stuff going on there. I mean, you hear about it, but 9 times out of 10, you get to talking to people who've had these bad experiences, and they're like, yeah, I was up there yelling at them, if you're here, do something. Mm-hmm. Well, then you got scratched. You asked for it.
Right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
They should get scratched.
They'd be happy to oblige, right?
Exactly.
Do you, oh, Sean.
Oh, the thing I was going to say, Kate, is that you're absolutely right about the whole idea of a place being haunted. Because, and then Austin Lawrence was talking to about that at our live show about how your senses are a little more heightened, you know, and that survival instinct kicks in, and you're, you know, the anxiety and fears and all that kind of stuff at night. But when I was there with you guys and we started that tour, it was broad daylight, and you guys took us in the parlor, told us the history, and then you took us downstairs immediately. And that there's a room back there that's fairly dark. It's concrete. There's nothing in there. And I forget exactly. There was some ominous, like, I don't know if it was a punishment room or something had happened in there. I didn't know that. I don't think anybody said that at that time. But I was in the back of the group, and there was nobody else behind me. Austin was in front of me, and then the two guys were in front of him. And from the back corner, and nobody was in the back corner, I heard and felt, I felt like somebody ran up to me. Like if somebody ran up to you and just whispered in your ear, that's what it felt like. And it was a male's voice, and it was a kind of a whisper, and it said, hey. And it was just like it was trying to get my attention. And it actually didn't, you know, it kind of spooked me out a little bit, because I thought, oh, somebody's back here just messing with me. You know, somebody's just like, oh, it was a good opportunity to scare Sean. Mm-hmm. And I turned around, nobody's there. And I said to Austin, I go, did you hear that? And he goes, hear what? And I was like, in my ear, I heard somebody like run up and say, hey. And I'm like, nobody's there. And I said, I'm not even like, this is not a joke or anything. And you guys kind of stopped and wanted to figure out what, you know, what was going on. And so we continued, couldn't figure out what that was. And there was a girl. So there was a couple teenagers, and the guy had been there before and the girl had not. And so it was completely new to her. And she was fairly, I think, you know, kind of creeped out anyway. And we hadn't really gotten to talk to him until after that happened. She came to me later and she said, hey, are you the guy that heard the voice in your ear? And I said, yeah. And she said, what did it say? And I said, it just like said, hey, in kind of a whisper. And I said, it was a guy's voice in my right ear. She said, in the hallway, I heard a girl, and it was in my left ear. And she said, nobody was there, when it was like somebody came up and said, hey, to her. And so she said, I wasn't going to say anything to anybody, but when I started hearing that you were talking about it, I didn't feel crazy. She said, I thought maybe I just had, you know, imagined it. And I was like, no, I said, and honestly, I go, I know that there are things that we can't explain out there. And I tend to be a little skeptical, but I'm also open to, hey, if something's going to happen. But I was more thinking about the history and just like kind of engrossed in the tour. And so I wasn't even thinking about something coming out, but that was in broad daylight as well.
Yeah, so that's pretty common.
There was a guy that ran up behind Dan when he first bought the place. And it was a spirit. Dan drew back like he was going to hit him. he was running up towards Dan, and Dan thought he was going to punch him or something, you know, and Dan drew back like he was going to hit him. So that's down there in that basement too.
Hey, you were saying, before Sean was telling that good story. So yeah, like we have all these people come on our show and they talk about, like, you know, it really doesn't matter if it's day or night as far as if a place is haunted. But do you guys find that the certain residents that have stuck around, are there more times that they're more active than others, or is it just depending on how many people, if it's a tour investigation, is it daytime, nighttime?
I think it's more about the people who are coming through.
Yeah.
We've had our daytime stuff. We don't have age restrictions on. So nighttime, you have to be 16 or older. Period. That's just, you know, my boss is really concerned about safety with kids, and there's too many stairs and it's dark, and it's just, he won't allow them. But during the day, 10, 11 year old YouTubers who are wanting to get into paranormal and live stream their investigations. And I find that kids, especially all over that building, will get incredible activity. All over the place.
That's remarkable, really.
And so I think it's more about who the person is that's investigating and their attitude about the spirits, because kids really are innocent. They're there to see, they're there to learn. They want to get to know them. They're hoping that, you know, they'll talk to them. Not because, you know, I need the evidence. It's like making a new friend to them. Mm-hmm. And I think the spirits pick up on that. And so I think it's more about the people that are coming in than the spirits themselves.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And they say kids are pretty open to that.
Yeah,
you know?
Receptive.
Yeah. And have you ever had like animals come in, like a dog or something that to roam through the asylum just to see?
We allow service animals in. Okay. And we have one, Melissa. She's a frequent guest there and sometimes volunteer.
Yeah.
And she has service animals. She also trains them. And you watch her dog sometimes. Her dogs know what's going on.
Yeah.
Cool. You'll see the dog turn to look down a hallway or something like that. She's like, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. There's nothing there. Yeah.
They're like, well, don't seem like it's fine. Yeah, that's funny. That's cool, though. That's neat that you guys do let service dogs come in there. We love our pups, don't we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have to say on the kid thing, it's funny because just last night, my 11-year-old daughter, Ella, and then my son, who's 13, William, they're our youngest two, and they were asking me when they can start coming on some of these investigations. I said, well, number one, your mom has to be okay with it. But they are pretty fearless. They love this kind of stuff. They're interested in, so that's interesting to know that they can come, you know, during the day. And again, I got to get mom's approval, but I told him, I said, it's really honestly fun because the neighbor lady was out and she was saying, I'm a big chicken and I don't think I'd want to go to those places. And she said, well, how many places have you been? So I told her and I said, you know, the majority of them I've been to are very calming. And I said, even at night, I said, most times, you know, you think that, you know, they're going to be scary and they're really not. So it's kind of cool that my kids are showing an interest in that as well, because I'd love for them to experience it, you know, too.
Well, I think part of it is that a lot of people think of ghost investigating and they think of scary movies.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not dishes flying off the shelves.
Right.
It's not, you know, the shadow slamming the door, you know, anything like that. You might get a door slamming, but mostly it's just trying to talk to a stranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
And building that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how you said that it's mainly the people that come through, that gets them to interact, and especially children. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went there, I felt calm. I mean, I felt like it was a calming place. I didn't feel threatened at all, or, you know, in any of the areas. So
our schedules made it so we had to leave and couldn't do the overnight, but I admit, I was like, I really wanted to stay, you know, like that's, I don't know.
Yeah.
But...
yeah. We definitely need to get back. A story I don't want you guys to forget to talk about. I know generally about it, but I want the listeners to know. What's the story about the gentleman that? I don't think he committed suicide. Did he fall off the second floor, or something like cleaning windows or something? Do you guys remember that story?
Ted, you know, tell him about John Oliver Champ.
John Oliver Champ.
Yeah.
But John Oliver was an 86-year-old man from Ridgeville, about 20 miles from here, and he was here. John Oliver's got long white hair, snow white hair. He pulls it back into a ponytail. Plus, he's got a big snow white handlebar mustache, and he's really a cool looking guy. I've seen lots of pictures of him, and he lived up there on the second floor. His room was the second one. The judge's room was the first one, but he lived on the second one, right past the judge. Well, the judge had warned the caretaker out here that during World War II, we was liable to have some people, men out here, that he wasn't going to like. And so the judge first came out here. He was asked what he was wanting to do to help. And so they put him in charge of security. So the first thing that the judge did was take the superintendent to Randolph County and Randolph County Jail, and they bought a jail cell and took it apart and brought it out here. And the judge could have mock trials up in the attic. Well, the first thing, the judge was like, he could see things that was happening, that what the judge was worried about was draft dodgers. And he was right. There were four of them out here that didn't pass their physicals when they got drafted for World War II. And they came back out here, and this place had to take them because they had already lost their jobs and they didn't have any place to live or anything. And so when they came back out here, there were four of them, like I said, and they were like thugs more than anything else. They was going to control this building. And one of the things that they did one night when they first started was all four of them got together and went over on the lady's side and pulled off a gang rape and got away with it. Because everybody was terrified of them. They wouldn't say anything. Well, John Oliver Champ, he didn't like them. And he's 86 years old, and he's not impressed. And so he told him, he said, "By God, I'll testify against you. We'll throw you in that jail down there where you ought to be." And so the thugs, different thugs out there, thought that he was kind of a brown noser because he lived right next door to the judge anyhow. And so they didn't particularly care for John Oliver. So I think it was October or September of 1945. They had a fall cleanup day out here where everybody dusts their room and sweeps it out and washes the window on the inside and outside. Well, John Oliver lives on the second floor. He's not going to go up no extension ladder to wash the outside of the window when he's 86 years old. And I don't blame him at all. And so he stood on a chair and washed the inside of his window really clean. And it's kind of more or less to do what he's supposed to do. He opened his window up to his room halfway open and sat down backwards on the windowsill and closes the window down on his legs to kind of hold him in place. And then he reaches up as high as he can on the outside of the window to do the outside of it. And a couple of them thugs were going down the hallway and seen him sitting in the windowsill like that. And they said, "Well, this will look like an accident. This will be easy." And so they ran in there, threw open his window, grabbed his legs, and pushed him over backwards out the window. And he landed on the back of his neck down below. You remember where that wheelchair ramp is on the outside out there? Mm-hmm. The wheelchair ramp was not there then. He just landed on the ground down there. But it definitely broke his neck, and it killed him.
Yep.
And so... Wow. That's needless to say, while the caretaker was coming from the barn back to the house, and he's seen him fall out the window. And of course, the caretaker could also looked up in the window right away, and it's a wavy old glass, and the sun was shining on it, so he couldn't see who was up there. But he seen two guys kind of looking out the window to see if they got him killed. And then the superintendent went back in the house and went upstairs real quick. And needless to say, the guys ran. And obviously, nobody's seen nothing. Actually, nobody's going to tell, because they don't want to be the next one pushed out the window.
Yeah, right.
Nobody saw anything. And so caretaker knew pretty much who did it, who was responsible, and let the county commissioners know who was responsible. And they got the sheriff out there and drilled them about it. And one of them broke and admitted to it. And so it was reported to the county commissioners who it was for sure. And you got to keep in mind, in 1945, there's telephones and cars and stuff. And so the county commissioners got on the phone and called East Haven down at Richmond. That's a state mental institute down at Richmond, and had them guys transferred down there. And they spent the rest of their lives in a padded jail cell and straitjackets. So they got what they had coming to them.
Sure.
Wow.
That's a horrendous story. Poor guy. Gosh, 86. You don't think that's how you're going to go. And some couple of idiot thugs pushing him out there to kill him. That's pretty bad.
Yeah. See, it was a blessing. This place was a blessing to the majority of the people. Yeah. But it was a nightmare to some occasionally.
Yeah.
I remember the story down in the basement where somebody got stuck in the laundry chute, wasn't it? Or the dumbwaiter. Was it a dumbwaiter? No, it was a laundry chute. And I can't exactly.
Oh,
it was a laundry chute, yeah.
That's because that has nothing to do with the history of the place, actually.
Didn't somebody like try to hide down there? Isn't that where they were?
So we let the local cops come out, and they do SWAT training. They also do canine training out at the asylum. And they were doing canine training out there, and our caretaker at the time decided he was going to smash his body into the laundry chute to hide from the canines who were going to try to find him. They found him.
How did you remember?
The dogs.
That was one. Those are the ones that stuck in my. The other one that sticks in my mind is the mummy. The resident mummy that you guys have, because that was so.
I remember that one.
You remember that one?
Yeah.
Ted told that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get to tell this one?
You can if you want to, Katie.
Okay, so how good are you guys at American history?
Sean's probably the best.
I'm decent.
Okay, 1930s U.S. history. What's going on?
The Depression.
Yeah.
Great Depression. So people are out of work. They're looking for, we're going to use the word creative ways to make money instead of illegal, okay? A gentleman in Ansonia, his name is Mr. Mose. Well, he's an elderly Black man, and he passes away. And he doesn't have any family, so the county has this guy's body, and they just keep sitting on it. They don't do anything with it. They just got him in cold storage. And gentlemen from Ansonia heard what was in duty. They wanted to claim Mr. Moses' body and take care of him. So the county's thrilled, because now they don't have to pay for a burial. So they fill out the paperwork and sign Mr. Moses' body over to these two idiots, who promptly take him and wrap him up in linens and start driving him around all the little towns in the area like a sideshow carnival, and charge 10 cents a head to see the authentic Egyptian mummy. So Egypt mania is huge in the States, because this is not long after King Tut's tomb has been found. So Egypt mania is huge. These guys are raking it in. They're driving all over. It's 2 months in the summertime driving around with this mummy in the back of their car when they get to Winchester, where they set up on the courthouse lawn. So people are coming to see the mummy. But by this point in time, 2 months in the summer driving around with a dead dude, he's ripe and making people physically ill. So the sheriff got called and came and took the two yahoos to jail. And they brought Mr. Mose the mummy out to the asylum where he was buried in the Potter's Field there. So there is a mummy at the asylum.
That might be the only mummy in an asylum ever. I mean,
plenty of daddies, just the only mummy.
Lots of daddies, just not very very many mummies. That's a great story. I forgot about that one, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
You can look up on the history of the state of Ohio, and that story's in there. That's a true story.
Wow, that's crazy. That is a really kind of crazy, interesting story all at once. Driving, can you imagine driving around with?
There's a comment to that, I don't even know.
It'd be like a scene in a movie or something. Some
like brother, oh brother, where art thou?
Yeah,
kind of thing. Cool.
Weekend at Bernie's.
That's probably more accurate. Well, I have to say for both of you guys, just the way, and when we were there at the asylum, and even tonight, you guys are just great storytellers.
Yeah.
And I can say, I mean, I sit here with a big grin on my face because I've heard some of these stories. And actually, some of them are a little different, like the one with Doris, to hearing a little bit more of her backstory. I enjoy that. So both of you guys are excellent storytellers. And Ted, I feel like I'm just listening to my grandfather or my dad or my uncle, just to listen to story after story. And I eat it up.
Thank you.
Yeah, you both are great storytellers. Yeah, this place, our listeners need to get out there if they haven't been there already. It's one of the best places. We're going to wrap it up here in a minute. But I can't, like I said, I think I'm speaking for Nate and Sean, but the place is just fantastic.
It's special. Mm-hmm. It really is.
It is.
Let me tell you one thing about it quick before you wrap it up. You got to remember, I'm 75 years old and I was in Army infantry for 14 years and I was a firefighter for 20 years. And there was very little that I was afraid of. And so when these guys first hired me to start working for them, I had to tell them the truth. I don't believe in ghosts. And since then, that's changed greatly.
It would be that judge, right?
Yeah, that judge. I saw Doris Addington go between the dining room and the kitchen downstairs from the waist up. I have visually seen her.
Wow.
Dude, I don't know. I definitely believe in spirits now.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that we tell people out here is don't get rude with them.
Right. That's good.
We don't do that because you got to remember these people here, the spirits that are here, are just like anybody. They're just like us, only they've never had a break in life. And, you know, they're just like normal people. And so treat them like normal people. Don't be rude or anything to them, you know?
Yeah, and it's their home, too.
Yes, it is.
Right.
I have to say, that's one of the most enduring things about this place is that you guys have such a big heart for it. And there's so many of you guys. It's not just you two, I know. But that comes through, and just in this interview here, it comes through in spades. But it is when we're with you guys, it's definitely there. And now, like I said, I'm going to have to tell my kids that I can go and bring them during the day because I think they're going to really enjoy that. And I will love sharing that experience with them. And I wanted to also mention before we, I know I mentioned Lydia as somebody very special there. And then Melissa, those are two that we got to know very well while we were there. And they were just truly angels to us. We've become friends with them now and connected with them. So it's so nice that we've gotten to connected with all of you guys. And then you guys also have other locations around there, which we got to see the Stone Mansion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The other ones we have not gotten to see. I know there's five total, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah. The asylum's the biggest one.
Yep.
Go ahead, Ted.
I don't know what they are. I have yet to be down to Jimmy Jones' church.
And that's in Lynn.
Yeah.
Just south of Winchester.
Yeah, just about 5-7 miles south of Winchester.
Because that was the boyhood church, right? That was where he, as a kid, went to church?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jim Jones, yep.
Yeah, Jim
Jones.
No,
there was something there with that guy. He used to pay his buddies to bring him their dead pets so he could do a funeral for them.
I've heard that. I've heard that.
I didn't know that.
I've read a book about him. Yes, that's true.
Yep. Yep, I watched a documentary, Ted, that is a true story. Yep, he used to do funerals for the pets. Yep, crazy. What's some of the other locations? So we got the asylum, Jim Jones's boyhood church,
Blackford County Jail, right?
Yeah,
Stone Mansion, which you guys have seen,
right?
The old Blackford County Jail in Hartford City, Indiana, with that one you can get the speakeasy. It's a couple doors down. It just doesn't have the amenities the jail does, and we want our visitors to be comfortable. So all of our places have, you know, working restrooms and places to sleep and stuff, and speakeasy doesn't. So it comes with the jail as an add-on, but we have that location in Hartford City too. And then our fifth location is the Center Church, which is just outside of Portland, Indiana. And it's the quintessential white church with the steeple that was built just before the turn of the century.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, that's... So that's five, really five cool places that I wish I owned. No, I'm jealous, Kate. I'm jealous.
I can give you some advice if you want some.
Sure.
When you go down to Lynn, the Jimmy Jones Boyhood Church, don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Oh, yes.
But a bump.
Oh, yeah, drops it. That's a
good.
Great,
yeah. Yes.
Yes, that's.
I don't believe I would if I was you.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to. Yeah.
New.
What a crazy story that is. Yeah. Well, coming off of that, whoever wants to, Kate or Ted, tell our listeners how they can follow the goings on in the locations, or especially at the asylum, and then maybe give some information about like the tours and the investigations themselves, like our.
Go ahead, Kate. You're good at that.
Okay, so all of our locations have their own Facebook pages. So if you just plug in Randolph County Asylum on Facebook, you'll find us. Stone Mansion has its own page. We post on there activities we've got coming up, public events, and various things. Especially at Stone Mansion, we've been posting a lot about the work we've been doing since the tornado came through. We also started a new TikTok. So that's something Kate is trying to learn about. Ha 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 ha. And it's RCA 1899. Really easy to remember the initials of the location and the year it was opened, this building. So we have the TikTok that we do as well. And all of our locations also have websites. So you can get on there and you can learn more about the private overnight investigations, including the costs and the times and things like that. But at the jail, Stone Mansion, and the Randolph County Asylum, we offer the daytime history tours. And those are available daily, 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. is the start time. The asylum is the longest tour. It takes anywhere from 2 to 3 hours to do a tour out there. But we also offer those at the jail and at Stone Mansion. And then you can also book daytime mini hunts at any of our locations, again, between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. as a starting time. And you can get a 2-hour block of time where you get the building to yourself during the day. Because if it's haunted, it's haunted.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter day or night, right?
Exactly.
That's cool. We need to get out there. We need to go to some of the other places, though. I want to see. I'm really fascinated about Jim Jones's church. I think just because of that whole story when he was in Ghana and the mass suicide, that creeps me out. So I want to see the church. Yeah.
Just don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Ted, I promise. I will not.
The Stone Mansion was amazing, too. And just the fact that it weathered that tornado. It was like a tornado versus Stone Mansion. Stone Mansion won.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's impressive. Especially
how to build houses back then.
Some of the other structures did not fare so well. And the fence and the cemetery and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you go through there and see. When we were there, you could still see all of that destruction. So
That broke my heart because you guys posted pictures and videos on Facebook on the Randolph County Asylum, and I'm like, oh man, yeah. So saw all the trees down, and And a lot of the houses, when we drove over with Dan to see the stone mansion, you know, a lot of houses around the, just across the street had tarps and, you know, boards on top of their roofs. And it's just like, oh, the devastation was really, I felt really bad. I really felt bad for them.
The really remarkable thing in all of this is that that tornado came up and hit the side of Stone Mansion, and the neighbors on Stone Street, that's the historic row of homes where the workmen who built Stone Mansion lived, that row of homes, none of them was really touched by the tornado.
Weird.
It almost skipped over them after it hit stone and then continued on behind them where that you see the houses and the destruction. The other thing that I find interesting is the tornado tried to take out his house and the house won, and then headed to the cemetery where he was buried and didn't touch his tombstone.
Wow.
That
wow.
is funny.
You think about that, like there might be something there. It, you know, I don't know. It's fascinating regardless. I mean, how it didn't hit that. Yeah. That's.
Yeah. But Stone Mansion is open to the public again. So that's really good news. She's safe to be in, and we've been doing a lot of work over there to make sure that she's safe for the public to be in and for people to come and investigate and explore again. So that one is reopened to the public, which we're super excited about.
Very nice.
Awesome.
Very nice.
We first heard about Stone Mansion from Erin Ignatz, which is a friend of ours in the podcast here. She's one of our first interviews, and we've gone to some locations with her, and she told us about Stone Mansion and some of the experiences she had there. And that was,
I remember Erin. She's nice.
She's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's, that place is very near and dear to her.
Yeah. We'll have to get there too. I mean, I know we saw it, but like but actually
now back, yep, back in its, you know,
well, we're going to get back out there, Nate, Sean, and I, that's for sure. And we'll check out more of the locations because
we'll be glad to have you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we enjoyed our meet and greet, and that tour was awesome. And like I said, yeah, like Sean said, we just didn't have time to do the investigation, but we sure will the next time. That's for sure. But you guys are great and great storytellers, wonderful people. We feel like your family. And I know you guys have kind of adopted us to just the way you guys treated us was, I mean, way more than I thought we deserve, right? So, well, guys, we appreciate you, Ted and Kay, for coming on, taking time out of your busy schedules and telling our creepies about the Randolph County Asylum and some of the stories and the residents that they used to live there. Well, it still live there, just in a different way, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and thank you for, yeah, and thanks for giving the information about the tours and investigations, and hopefully people get out there and check it out. But we really appreciate having you on, and we'll have you on again down the road.
Well, we enjoy it. Thank you.
Oh, you're
welcome. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you guys for being such good caretakers of the place and curators, because I, you know, that is so important, and that we forget a lot of the services that people do, and that's a huge service that you guys are doing.
Yeah.
For the memory of the place, the history of the place, and the residents, like you said, that are still with us.
Yeah, and when we drop this episode, it'll be another week or two. We'll attach Randolph County Asylum, so it'll link or whatever you want to, it'll be tagged, I guess, is the term, and some of your followers will see that, you know, the post on Facebook, and thank you for telling us you have a TikTok, because I follow TikTok, so we're on there as well, so we'll follow that.
Okay.
What we'll do is we, you know, like I said, we hashtag everything and get some attachments and tags for you guys, and again,
that's part of what I have to learn how to do.
Yeah, it's kind of weird and hard, but it's
we're faux TikTokers too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Sean says I'm the one talking TikTok.
He
doesn't do anything. Oh, no, I'm kidding.
Nope.
Well, thanks guys for coming on, and we will, like I said, we'll talk at you later.
Okay. Have a nice evening.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks, Kate.
Bye-bye. Thank you guys so much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
There you go, Kate and Ted. What'd you like? What'd you like about them?
Kate and Ted.
Did they
Ted,
do a good
Kate,
job?
Amazing.
They're fantastic.
I don't think they're really good. They're not good storytellers.
You dirt.
No, they're fantastic.
You dirt.
Fantastic, I say.
Yes.
And I'm glad we brought them on to talk about the asylum, because we would not have done it.
No, it would not have been nearly
as good. Yeah, we would have butchered it.
Yeah.
That's their baby, right?
That is their baby.
Mm-hmm.
They love that place, and we do too. We've only been there one time. So,
well, Ted was actually there.
Yeah, he was sitting there. Yeah,
oh, that's right.
That's correct. Yeah.
Dan, the owner, one of the co-owners, he set him up with the video and all that. So he was on location, on site.
He really was. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very good. Very, very good. Yeah, we thought maybe having them on would be better to tell the stories. So, as you can tell, because I was like, I don't remember that. I mean, I remember most of it, but sometimes I was like, I don't remember. Yeah,
they probably would not have wanted us to misconstrue too many of those stories.
Well, like I said, they're consistent when they tell the stories, but they even added a little bit more background of Doris, or was Ida?
Doris.
Yeah, yeah. 70 years she lived there. Can you imagine that?
That's pretty wild, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, they've got some really cool stories to tell, and we're going to go back out there sometime.
Absolutely.
And I want to see the other properties. Mm-hmm. So, especially Jim Jones's. And what did Ted say? Don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Don't drink the Kool-Aid, yeah. Good, solid advice right there.
Absolutely.
Right?
So, thank you, Kate and Ted of the Randolph County Asylum. Moving on from that, Sean, I'm going to say middle-aged moment.
You're correct.
Yep, that's an easy one.
You think so? Yeah, because I was going to go the other way.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't. This is, Nate's going to appreciate this very much so, we're going to go Creed.
Oh, yeah.
Creed.
Higher. And once I read these lyrics, you're going to understand. It goes very well with the Randolph County Asylum. When dreaming, I'm guided to another world. Time and time again, at sunrise, I fight to stay asleep because I don't want to leave the comfort of this place. Because there's a hunger, a longing to escape from the life I live when I'm awake. So let's go there. Let's make our escape. Come on, let's go there. Let's ask, can we stay? Can you take me higher to a place where blind men see? Can you take me higher to a place with golden streets? Although I would like our world to change, it helps me to appreciate those nights and those dreams. But my friend, I'd sacrifice all those nights if I could make the earth and my dreams the same. The only difference is to let love replace all our hate. So let's go there. Let's make our escape. Come on, let's go there. Let's ask, can we stay? Can you take me higher? Can you take or to a place where blind men see? Can you take me higher to a place with golden streets? So let's go there. Let's go there. Come on, let's go there. Let's ask, can we stay? So, you know, I like the bridge too. Up high, I feel like I am alive for the very first time. Set up high, I'm strong enough to take these dreams and make them mine. Set up high, I'm strong enough to take the dreams and make them mine. And then, can you take me higher? And it goes on and on. But I love how this just, this is one of the songs that I've been kind of thinking about using. And it just felt like it fit perfectly. And like I said, I had considered doing a dark side and thinking, oh, this is, you know. But after that discussion, I was like, nope, I'm going Creed higher. That is like absolutely perfect. And a lot of the spirits that just are still there, that's comfort to them. That's home to them. And then the people that are there, like Ted and Kate, that are just caregivers and, like I said, curators. And they're, you know, they help to speak for the spirits of that place throughout history. And
very much.
And in this present time. So I think it's a beautiful thing, and I loved it. And I thought that would, that song is the best way to pay respect to the Randolph.
I agree.
Yeah.
Good job.
I've always been a Creed fan.
Have you? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't heard
that. I knew you'd like, that's why I knew you'd like that.
I like that song. I don't know a whole lot of their songs. I do know that one though. Mm-hmm. That is a good one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sean, for that middle-aged moment.
Yes.
Oh, looky here. Shout-outs. Sean, I'll start with you.
Start with me? Well, I'm going to just, I mean, it seems kind of like a duh, but I'm going to shout-out to the Randolph County Asylum and all of its, all the cohorts there. There's so many. There's too many probably
cohorts.
Names. Cohorts, like, yeah. They are. It's like a family there, truly. And I think we've been adopted to some degree, and but I don't think they understand what they've adopted.
True.
It's like...
truer words were never spoken.
We may end up in those straitjackets ourselves.
Or in the jail. Yeah.
In the jail, right. Yeah. That's true.
That's a good shout out. Any other shout outs?
No.
Okay.
None.
Nate, how about you, sir?
None that I can think of.
Okay. All right. Well, you don't throw them out there just willy-nilly. So
no,
when you get a shout out
mine.
From... you do. No, you really do. Okay. I'll move on to myself. I've got two. Elijah's soccer team, so my boys' soccer team, they play their last game tomorrow, the 3rd. They win that. They go 9-1.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So shout out to the Plainfield Middle School boys' soccer team and Coach Joel and his son. And I can't remember the assistant coach's name. Anyway, shout out to them for an awesome season, fun season. And then the other shout outs I have is I was on the Unfreaking Believable podcast. I was interviewed last night. And shout out to JB, Betsy, and Jenny, who are the tri-hosts, co-hosts.
The Triforce.
Yeah.
They're like us, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Only female.
it was so fun. They gave me a lot of time to speak, and we talked about mental health awareness, and they let me share my stories and my story. And it was
did
really
you go fiction or nonfiction this time?
Both.
Both. You did a little bit of both.
No, but shout out to them for letting me crash the party, and it was really fun. I had a good time. So I don't know when it drops, though. I did message JB just now, and she'll get back with me soon. So my mom's excited to hear.
They're good girls, and I said that they're like they're like us, only they're a lot more put together and polished and organized.
I told them they were really professional.
They truly are.
I said, unlike us. No, JB just got back with me. It'll drop on the 11th of October.
Oh, nice.
So is that next?
Soon.
Next Friday? Friday.
Next Friday, yeah.
So thank you, JB. So anyway, shout out to the Unfreaking Believable ladies. Mm-hmm. So that's my shout outs.
It's Unfreaking Believable.
It is unfreaking believable that they had me.
Couldn't put it any better.
Oh, thanks, Nate. Well, I was going to say something nice about you. I was going to give you a shout out, but no, forget about it. No, I'm not going to. Hey, yeah, anyway, shout outs are over. We have another sponsor. Hey, Creepies, do you like all things spooky? Do you love the fall season? Do you wish it could be Halloween all year long? Well, at Greenwood Happy Haunts, it is. Greenwood Happy Haunts is a year-round Halloween and fall store located at 248 Market Plaza, in Greenwood, Indiana. Custom vintage and unique items adorn the whole store. If you're looking for a unique gift for you or someone else, or just want to visit a place that puts a smile on your face, Greenwood Happy Haunts is for you. Mako listeners can get 10% off a single item when you mention this ad. Come to Greenwood Happy Haunts and get your spook on. Happy hauntings. So thank you, Greenwood Happy Haunts, for their sponsorship as well.
They're lovely people, don't you think, Nate?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a quick yeah.
That was,
yeah.
We'll take it.
Or is that a, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. You know.
Whatever floats the boat.
Nate, you do know we're going back there next year, right? For the live show 2025?
Yeah, I got to keep them on their toes.
Like a midget at a urinal?
Yep.
I hear you.
Leslie Nielsen.
Classic. Yes, it is a classic. So thank you, Greenwood Happy Haunts and Scott and Corey. Moving on, Sean, second announcements, please, sir.
I got them. You can follow us on our social media accounts, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, X, and Rumble. Email us at makopodcast@gmail.com. That's two A's. Make sure you hit that subscribe button, give us a 5-star rating, and leave a review if the app allows. Whether you are a business or individual and you want to be a show sponsor, email or message us on Facebook or Instagram. We sell all kinds of merch, so go get you some. And please check out our Friday Fright videos on all of our socials.
This week's mine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I missed it 2 weeks ago.
That's all right.
Yeah, anyway.
No harm, no foul.
No harm, no foul.
That's right. No blood, no foul.
I like it. I like it. Speaking of, I like it.
Yeah.
Nate, what do you have for us, sir?
Well, we ran off and did it again. Another good guest chat, but that's a wrap.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
I felt like I fed that to you telepathically. That's awesome.
He's trying to take credit for
no,
you.
No, well, yeah, I am kind of. But
I like that. That's,
I like
that's,
that a lot.
I'm going to turn down his mic.
Yeah, you should. Please do.
Please do. It's the end of the show. It's perfect timing.
Can you actually, like, not let him in the house?
How about the drop seat that you guys installed?
I'll get here first, and what we'll do is we'll change the code so he can get into the garage and
guys?
Get in the house. Guys. Anyway, hey, thanks, Nate. And we want to thank you, Creepies, for listening to episode 187 and our fun and informative guest chat with Miss Kate and Ted of the Randolph County Asylum. Until next time, Nate is your tech engineer. We are your hosts, Todd and Sean, and we are middle-aged.
And creeped out.
Keep it creepy.